Went and stayed in Macquarie Fields. We stayed in Campbelltown. I wanted to play NRL when I was younger, yes. At the age of 17, I got contracted to the West Tigers. Yeah, I went home. My dad was there. He was happy. My dad was like my biggest supporter. He's like, oh boy, your old man died last night. Yeah, it was like sort of a shock. So I went to jail for, I think it was like 16 armed robberies, a shooting, like drive-by shooting. I ended up getting sentenced to 12 years. Just lost, you know? I was just lost. I don't want to be like this anymore. You know what? I'm never going to hurt another person ever again.
Young soldier of God. Steady march.
Yeah, my name's Daniel Arson. So where I'm from, so I'm originally from New Zealand. I was born here in 1991. I left here in 1998 when I was 7 years old to live in Australia. I was taken over there with my parents and my older sister. And I lived there for the last 26 years in Sydney. Been about 18 months now. I got deported back to Auckland, so that's where I'm at now. I'm in Auckland. You would have thought it was going to be my biggest curse being deported from Australia, but it's turned out to be a biggest blessing. Why, just a quick rundown of why I got deported. I served 7.5 years in prison in Australia and 6 months in a detention. So I was detention centers where they hold the deportees. So 8 years all up, I was locked up over there from the age of 23 to 31. So the move to Australia was in 1998 when I was 7 years old. My parents wanted us to move over there because, well, there was no good work over here. The wages are low. We went and stayed in Macquarie Fields. We stayed in Campbelltown. We went to a primary school. We went to St. John's. Primary school. For high school, I sort of skipped around a couple of high schools. A couple of them I got in trouble for like little misdemeanor things. I got suspended from one, then I didn't want to go back to it because, like, I don't know, I was embarrassed that I got suspended over something dumb. But I ended up going to the school that I loved to go to was Endeavour Sports High School in Caringbah. I ended up going there for football because I was an all right footy player, and that was one of the top football schools at that time. I'm pretty sure it would be still now. Yeah, a lot of NRL players come out of there. I wanted to play NRL when I was younger. Yeah, so that's why I went to that school. And school footy over there is highly accredited, like footy. Like a lot of people watch the school footy, like selectors in that year. So that's the sort of comp you want to be playing in and do good in, because that's where you sort of get noticed, you know. I used to travel there from Campbelltown every day. It was, if anyone's from Sydney, like that's pretty far, you know.
How far?
From Campbelltown out to the beach. I think like it's like a 1 to 2 hour train ride and buses and that. Yeah, I used to do that every day. That's how much I loved footy. Paint a picture for Campbelltown. Well, it's looked at, well, back then too, when I was younger, it was looked at as one of the hoods of Sydney, you know, like one of the ghetto areas, especially like Claymore, Ayres, Macquarie Fields, Minto. I haven't been back there in ages now because obviously I was in jail and I'm back here now, but I've heard like it's all changed now. But back then when we were growing up, it was looked at as the hood, but it didn't appear to be hood to me when I was young. It was just like all normal. I'd never seen like bad stuff or anything like that. You heard about it, but I never seen it or anything like that. A lot of islanders around there. At the age of 17, I got contracted to the West Tigers. It was just like I wasn't like on some big millionaire contract or anything, you know what I mean? That's not how it works. But you know, like when you're 17 years old and you like contracted to like a club like that's an NRL, you think you're like the shit, you know. You know, like, but you're just a little shit, you know, that's like good at footy.
Did you play with any like famous people now, or like?
Oh yeah, players? Yeah. Heaps of boys in the NRL now, you know. Yeah, so boys that went on from Endeavour Sports High School, Martin Tapau, Joey Leilua, they were all in our team. Blake Ferguson. I played alongside Jason Tomalolo for the Australian Under 18s. It was straight sports, bro. I did get in trouble, and I actually got caught getting in trouble for I can't remember what was it. It was like a couple of assaults, GBH. We got arrested for it. They released us on bail, but all of us were contracted to, like, one of the boys was, I think, to the Dragons. lucky that we had some sort of support and that backing us, that the judge just put us on good behavior bond, saying that I'll take this as a silly mistake that you've made while you were drunk on a silly night out. Like, we got bought a box, went and got drunk at some house party, ended up bashing a couple people. Yeah, and the judge just took it as a one-night thing. We don't want to be putting you in jail and wreck your footy career or whatever you got going, because things are looking like they're going good. Yeah, so I turned 18, finished school, went straight into training pre-season with West Tigers under-20s team at that time. My first game back, my first season of 20s, Easter weekend. Yeah, I went home. My dad was there. He was happy. My dad was like my biggest supporter. He was like, I love my dad. And if he said to do something, I would do it, because I knew that his intentions were, it's what's best for me. Like, I had a lot of love, a lot of respect for my dad. Yeah, we went home. My dad was having a drink with my uncle at the house. He was happy that I was back from injury, because I stuffed my shoulder. It was my first game back. And yeah, it was all good, whatever. We went home. I went to sleep. Woke up the next morning. Yeah, and my dad wasn't home, which was weird. And then mum's like, oh, he must have slept at uncle's house last night. So I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to go over there and see what they're doing, you know. I'm close with my uncle as well. Always go over his house and that. Yeah, I went over his house. And as I'm driving to my uncle's house, which was about, they'd just moved over from Australia too. Moved from New Zealand to Australia as well. Yeah, him and his wife, my auntie, and their kids, my little cousins. Yeah, so I'm driving over to his house to see if my dad's there. I'm not thinking much of it, to be honest. I'm just thinking, oh yeah, I'm gonna go there. He's passed out on the couch. You know what I mean? on the way there, a cop car pulls me over. And I was like, oh man, fucking hell, bro, I can't be with this shit. Like, you know what I mean? And then a cop jumps out with my uncle. My uncle's sort of like in tears. And I'm like, bro, what's going on? And then I jumped out the car. And the cop's like just standing there. My uncle comes up to me and he's like, oh boy, your old man died last night. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, yeah, it was like sort of a shock. It didn't really hit me, eh? I was just sort of like looking at him like blank. And then like I sort of like put my hand on my head and I was just like, what do you mean he's like dead last night? Well, they had an altercation at the pub. They went to the pub. They were asked to leave. And while they were leaving, words were being said between them and the bouncers and the manager. And it broke out into a fight. And the bouncers restrained my dad, put him on the ground, and held him till the police came. Yeah, well, while they were holding him down, I'll try to say this without like bias, because those guys to me too, they're forgiven. You know what I mean? I forgave them a long time ago. But there's, I think it's on the internet too. If you type it in, it was like three Islanders bouncers. They were like sitting on my father's back for 15 minutes. That was 2010 or 11. Yeah, when I was 19, so it would have been 2010. Everyone knows what Islander bouncers look like. They're all like 130 kilograms plus. Three of them sitting on your back for like 15 minutes. I don't know what else they were doing, you know. Yeah, he died of asphyxiation. And then when I got home, and then my mum comes out with my two little sisters. My little sisters were 11 and 9 at the time. I was like, Mum, like, hey, Dad died last night. Hey, and she's like, it hit her quick, like, not like me. She didn't think about it. She just fell to the ground. I remember she fell to the ground and started screaming. And then, like, my little sisters were like, where's Dad? I was like, no, don't worry, he's not coming back, eh? I told everyone, I always tell everyone that I quit footy that day, but I kept playing. I kept playing the footy games, but in my mind, I quit. I kept playing throughout the whole year into the next year, but I ended up getting dropped from the 20s game the next year. that whole time too, I was like rocking, like I don't even know if the coach knew or the coaches knew, but like sometimes I was drunk at training. Yeah, I wasn't even much of a drinker back then. Like I probably could count the amount of times I've drank on one hand, you know, when I'd just sneak in bottles when I was like 15 years old, you know, like little kids, you know. But then here I was like drinking heavily every day, going to training. I remember there was a couple of games too that I played, and I literally just came straight from the city from a nightclub. Went home, got my footy boots, jumped in a cold shower to like wake myself up, and then went and ran and jumped on one of the footy fields. It was just a slow decline. I was playing shocking footy too, you know, straight up. Like I don't blame myself for getting dropped from the team, eh? From that day, like I got dropped from the team, but it doesn't mean I'm like out of the team. You know what I mean? I can still work my way back to the team. But I remember, after he dropped me to the team, I went to the training for a week. And then there was one day where I was just standing there at the door with my footy bag going to, on my way to footy training. And I was standing there for ages, eh? And then I was like, my mom came up, she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, straight up, I was like, this, bro, I'm not playing footy ever again. And then that's when I just, like, I don't even know what happened to them, my footy boots, and then I just chucked them in the bin. I was like, I don't want to play this ever again. I'd lost the love for it ages ago, you know? I was just playing it out of like, it was like a habit. I didn't know what else to do, you know? I never touched a drug in my life too, but it was like all in that week. I met up with some of the boys that I knew from school that were up to no good. Never smoked a cigarette in my life, nothing like that. It was just alcohol. And then, I went out that night, had a line of cocaine, felt mad. Had a cigarette after the line, you know, like, and then that was just me. I was gone with that. I ended up starting to sell cocaine, done it right at one stage, and then I just put it all up my nose, being an idiot. The next 3 years after I quit footy were just like wild, like straight, it was like wild partying, a lot of like crime. So I went to jail for, I think it was like 16 armed robberies. A shooting, like drive-by shooting. There was a kidnapping there. But took a deal. A lot of it got dropped down, and I ended up getting sentenced to 12 years. Ended up serving 7.5 or 6 months in detention. Those are all the stuff I was getting up to. And during that time, it was a lot of just lost, you know? I was just lost. Changed the whole trajectory of my life for sure. All I'd ever known was football. And even like through those years, I was like, fuck, I wish I still had a love for footy. I was like, what happened to it, you know? I used to like beat me up. I used to have dreams that I was playing footy and then I'd wake up like it was a nightmare. You know what, like if you see me during those 3 years, like most of the time I was like, I looked like I was happy. You know what I mean? I didn't really show it much on the outside. I didn't really complain. I'm never been much of a complainer, you know. I'm still just a young boy, eh? Just lost. You think you're like you're tough at that stage, eh? When you're young and you're rolling around doing like naughty stuff and that, but really you're just a lost boy. And now that you're like in a man's body and you're capable of a lot more damage, you're just more dangerous to the environment when you chuck a tantrum, right? You know, when I got arrested, like fuck, they made a big deal out of it. The cops, eh? It was on the news, Channel 7 and that. By that stage, I was gone, eh? I think like 4 months before I went to jail, I like started smoking meth every day. It was like, because before that, the drug use was like party and then like stop. It was like whenever I party, but then the party would always get out of hand. But 4 months before I went to jail was when we were always against meth too, the boys, but I don't know what happened, eh? 4 months before I went in, I just started smoking it hard out. Yeah, you know what, when I got arrested, like straight out, I honestly didn't give a shit, eh? You know, when I got arrested, it was just like, who cares, you know? Looking back, like I think I was in sort of like a suicidal mind state, but I didn't want to kill myself, but I was just in that mode, or I didn't really care if I live or die anyway, you know? First of all, it didn't bother me that I was in prison because, like, I was at a state I didn't really care about anything anyway, you know? But I just know to walk into there, I was more of just kick back and be observant. It's probably the wise thing to do, eh? Just learn how the thing is, how this, and you, like you've probably seen it yourself, people who walk in and think they know and they want to start talking into the politics of jail, you know, anyone who's been in jail, you know the politics, and someone new comes along, tries to have a word on it, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't end up good for them, you know? I didn't know all that stuff back then, but I knew that I needed to just be quiet, show respect to everyone. It's a man's world, it's a dangerous world, and that's what I done. I just stayed back and I started training, which is probably one of the best things you can do in jail. I've noticed boys who just train in jail, other boys just leave them alone. You sort of get a respect that, oh, you're staying strong in jail. So that's what I done. I went to jail, started training hard. I got fit not long after that again. I was super fit, like 6 months after I got to jail. I got myself back into shape. I wasn't touching drugs or anything like that. I was smoking cigarettes. That was something I'd never really done much either, but I started pumping cigarettes in jail. When I went in, they charged me with, it was the shooting, I think it was use of a dangerous weapon in company. It was just like threatening someone with a gun. No one got hurt with that one. That was separate from the shooting and kidnapping. And I think like two or maybe four armed robberies or something. But the reason why it was 4 years is because when it came to time for sentencing or trial for the first charges, the cops came and charged me with another, I think it was like 12 armed robberies after I'd been in for 2 years. But I was at Long Bay that whole time. So I went to Parkley Silverwater for a little bit, but most of the time I was at Long Bay Jail, which is in Sydney. And I just moved around in between because they got different wings. They moved us around to different wings from 11 and 12 wing to 7 wing. That was back in from 2014 to 2018 I was there. But you know what, man? I went up there and then the judge is like reading out all my charges and that. You know, my family's there and like I'm sort of like half getting embarrassed about like all the stuff they're bringing up, you know, like because I told my family like half the story. And you know, when I heard that 7.5 years on the bottom, because I've been told I was going to do 13 years with no parole, but I got half that 7.5 years. I looked at the cops and I smiled, you know. I was like, oh mate. Oh, I went to a C-class, so Cessna. I didn't last long there. I ended up getting done with a phone like 2 months later. Was it Nowra? Yeah, I went to Nowra jail after that, bro. Maximum prison, Nowra maximum prison, which that was a good jail, man. There was real good boys there. Yeah, throughout my jail it was just mainly a lot of training. I wasn't the worst person in jail, but like I definitely wasn't behaving myself. It was always trying to do something that get up to no good, eh? I don't know. I don't know where it stops, where I'm telling a story or if I'm bragging about violence, you know? That's why I just don't even share those stories anymore. Because, like, you know, once upon a time, like, even with yourself, there was a time where we used to share those stories with the boys as a laugh, you know? But, like, it's hard for me to tell those stories now, especially because I'm on a walk with Christ. I'm, like, super, like, no, it's, like, sort of disgusting behavior to me now, you know? The things that are like whatever I used to get into and all that sort of stuff, you know. My whole jail sentence as a whole, it was pretty cruisy, bro. Besides the getting in trouble, like the getting in trouble wasn't even that bad in my eyes, because like you're just like normalized to it. You know what I mean? Looking back on it now, like you realize how messed up some of it is that happens in prison, you know. Like, there's, like, you see fights over, like, the littlest things. Like, even I myself have had little altercations over, like, dead set someone borrowing the pen and not giving the pen back, like, you know, like, and you don't realize that till now, but when you're in there, it's, like, it's normal, you know? You see someone get messed up over, like, I don't know, like, a missing tuna can, you're like, oh, that's what you get, brother, you know? Hey, that's what you're thinking, you know? And then, like, sometimes I think about those things now. It's like, I'm like, man, what the hell was going on back then, you know? Definitely learned a lot about myself because, straight up, like, there were times in there where it broke me. And it wasn't really the jail itself. Like, I reckon I could, like, back in those days when I was, like, in that mindset of like being a criminal. Now doing jail was nothing to me. You know what broke me was the stories of my little sisters struggling on the outside, like because they were like sort of out there fending for themselves. You know, dad passing away when they're 9 and 11. Like straight out, it affected me. Not many boys in jail I spoke to about this. I don't think there was any. I think there was one of them that knew at the time. You know, was my one of my cellmates who I'm still mates with now. He's a good guy. But yeah, as an older brother, dad passing away, I put a lot of guilt on myself at that time too when it happened. I hadn't been sentenced yet, and I was actually getting told I was going to do 10 to 15 years. And I was thinking, man, by the time I get out, like, my little sisters is going to be older. I don't know how messed up they're going to be by then, you know what I mean? Like, my little sisters full turned their life to Christ, being baptized, you know? So it all turned out well in the end, you know? God had a plan, you know? And I think she's going to do some great things. She's very early in her walk with Christ, but it's such a strong walk. I tell a lot of people I've done the Bible correspondence courses, but I never thought about turning to Christ. It was just because I liked the information, when actually that's not true. And I don't really say this a lot, but yeah, I started the Bible correspondence courses, like, and I started praying. I started to not participate in the gossip of the yard, the politics of the yard. I started. No one would have even noticed this back then. But they were like, because it was like my own thing. It was like my own secret thing. I was like, well, I don't know. I don't want to do these anything anymore because I'm reading the Bible. I'm studying it. And I could feel the change within me, you know. And there were people I remember one incident. Someone said something to me and like, it's something that you should have done something about it. And I was like, I told one of the boys, like, no, I don't want to do anything. I didn't tell anyone this because, you know, it was because I was reading the Bible or anything like that, you know. But I turned away from it and I sort of like, people were looking at me different after that, you know? This was about 2 years into my jail sentence, bro. And I was talking to one of the ladies that was marking the papers, saying that she can come into the jail and baptize me. And that's when I found out a lot of things, what was happening with my little sisters. And I know this from experience, like from my house getting robbed when I came to New Zealand later, that it was the devil testing me, because it happened exact same the first time. So what happened is, and this is when I got charged with the extra armed robberies, bro, all in the same month. And so I rang home, and my little sister, I hadn't heard from her in a couple of weeks. She'd always answer the phone. They ended up telling me, oh, she's in hospital. I think she was like 16 by then. Like, she got addicted to meth like a while ago. You know, I'm sorry, Nessa, if I've shared, but I have to share this because it's part of my story. She's actually let everyone know it now anyway. So there was no one really to look after her. My mom, like, I love my mom, but she was lost too after dad died for years. Yeah, and then I was like, where's my little sister? And they're like, oh, she's in hospital. Yeah, like something along the lines of she tried to off herself, you know? And this was like 3 weeks after I just got charged with 12 more armed robberies. Yeah, and like, I was thinking, you know, God, like, come on, man, no. Like, well, why am I doing all this Bible study? I want to turn my life around, you know? And I didn't realize it back then, but it was the devil. The devil would come, you know? I don't know what happened, but he said, oh, look, I bet I can get this guy back. That happened, and when I found out all that stuff, I literally walked back into my room, and my cellie at the time saw me do it. I just grabbed the Bible, and I just chucked it in the bin. And I said a prayer to God. And you know what? I still pray to God throughout all the years. But I remember praying to God that night, and I was like, come on, God, like, that's a bit too much, brother. That was the words I said. I was like, bro, like, straight up, like, a bit of a big test, brother. But, you know, like I look back now, and it was all for some sort of reason, you know, to where I am now. And then, yeah, like, so after that, I never told anyone that story. I just told them, and I continued. So I ended up getting another Bible because it was in the habit, and I just used to read the Bible here and there, not as much as what I used to, but just because I was always just interested in learning about it. And I still carried that on throughout my sentence, but I wasn't diving as deep into it as I was in the first couple of years. I knew the whole time I was going to get deported. Like, I knew it was coming anyway. Heaps of Islander boys and that were getting deported. Some of them very young too. Like, I think I was very fortunate like in a way that I came over at the age of 31, I got deported because I was a lot more like wiser than, like I've seen some of the boys like come over when they're 19, 20, 21 and like to no family and like no experience on like how to like do anything. Like if I came over at that age, bro, I would have been in the same situation as them, you know? So it's sad. So I've seen a lot of the young Islander boys getting deported over here, and I've seen a lot of them since I've come back, or heard of a lot of them, and a lot of them are in jail, addicted to meth, like just getting around, seeing them around, and yeah, they're not doing too good. A lot of them, some of them are doing good, but a very low percentage, like one or two out of every 10 I've ran into, are like doing something decent. Yeah, so I was up at Clarence. It's a new jail. Man, that's the best jail ever, bro. Real cushy jail, new jail. Because I spent most of my time in Long Bay and Goulburn. Those are like the, especially Goulburn, like anyone who's done jail in Sydney, they know that's like the worst jail. You don't get nothing there, eh? But yeah, I spent my last year at Clarence. I got to Villawood and I seen some of my close mates there. And I just wanted to spend time with them because otherwise I would have just jumped on the plane straight away. But because, yeah, some of my close, like these boys are my brothers. I just wanted to spend 6 months with them before I flew back. So that's what I done, spent some time with them. And then I flew back here by myself. Yeah, I didn't want to spend too much time fighting it because I've seen a lot of boys, they spend like 3 or 4 years fighting it and then they still get a no. I got off the plane, you're met by police, they take your fingerprints and there's a guy there from like parole. You have to give them your fingerprints, give them your DNA. There's a guy there from PARS. Yeah, he's a real nice guy too. Like, even the police would be nice, but like I'm fresh out of jail. I'm like, bro, these guys are being nice for some reason. You know, it's all a setup. You know, yeah, I'm just thinking like that. You know, I'm just nice back, but I'm really thinking, bro, like this guy's asking me for my number, and I'm like, bro, do I have to give this guy my number? You know, like you're just sus on everything. I'm sort of like anxiety because I haven't been around people in 8 years, bro. You know what I mean? Like there's like, it may seem weird, but there's like little kids running around. I'm like, I haven't even been around kids in ages. Like people just walking around freely and it's real overwhelming, you know? Cause I'm like, am I even to be out right now? Am I allowed to walk around here? I was like sort of freaking out. It was a real, yeah. And I've seen so many boys come back too now off the plane and they're in that same situation. You know, they're walking off the plane and they're dropping their phone and because it's just like, you're just like so not used to being free, especially after a long lag, you know. So when I got off the plane, I didn't know anyone here. I hadn't been back here in 26 years. All my family and friends were in Australia. Any of the close friends that I had were in Australia or in jail in Australia. And anyone I knew in Auckland were already in jail over here, which were other deportees. That's the only people I knew at that stage, you know. And yeah, so I came here and I was staying in lodges, not really ideal places that you want to be staying in, but I will say this before I say how the last 18 months is. I am a very positive person. I've always been like that. You can put me in any situation and I'll always find the good out of it, you know. Like when I first got deported, I was thinking like, yeah, this is shit. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know, like this is a new opportunity. It's a new country. I can start all over again. I don't have to do parole or anything like that. You just don't have any direction when you get off the plane, eh? You know that, Dave. You don't know which way is up. I was just so the lodge that I was staying in, not really ideal. So on Fridays and Saturday nights, it was sort of like it was a bar. It was a bar on Friday and Saturday nights. There were other boys staying there too and couldn't really sleep there. So Friday and Saturday nights, we used to have to go out. And what I used to do, I used to literally just walk around Auckland City all night. One of the other 501 boys that I knew when I came back, he used to come and walk around with me. And the thing is that we couldn't go sleep at his house because he lived with boys who were smoking crack. And I just got out of jail. I didn't want to go be around that stuff because he was like, oh, we can go kick back at mine. And I was like, nah, straight up, I'm not going there, bro, you know. And so that's what we were doing every week in wandering the streets. One night, I slipped in the car one night. I stay positive at that time. Like, I was just sort of laughing at it, like, you know. Maybe that's a coping mechanism, I don't know. But one thing that I kept doing while I was staying in those lodges, I thought from jail, the thing that kept me strong in jail was training and keeping my mind busy. So even though I was staying in those lodges, the first thing I'd done when I got to them was I went and signed up at gyms and started working out just to keep my mind and my body strong. Because, I just really knew that if I lost myself over here, I was, well, there's no better way to put it, I was, you know. If I lost my mind over here, turned to drugs, I'm going to end up in a crack den. I'm stuffed. If I'm going to end up turning to crime and doing something silly because I'm desperate to get out of this situation, I'm going to end up in jail. I'm stuffed. And those are sort of like the options that are in front of you. And I think that's why like so many 501s end up turning down that path. You know, none of these houses, I need to get out of this place. None of these houses are working. So I ended up getting help from like an ex-girlfriend. Her old man stays here in Auckland, and I contacted him, and it was sort of like outreaching, like in desperation, you know, just to get away from the places that we're at. And I rang him, and he's like, "Oh, I'll ring." He goes, "I can help you. I can ring this guy named Dave Latelli. Runs a place called Grace Foundation." I didn't know who Dave was back then. I don't know what Grace Foundation was, but he ended up calling me back about half an hour later and saying, "Dave said you can move into this place." I can't explain my story without explaining the Grace Foundation, because it's been the vessel God has used to change so many people's lives, including my own. There's no way I can tell my story without mentioning it. And I'm forever grateful to God for guiding me to Grace Foundation. So I'll go to Grace Foundation. Grace Foundation has many different sections. One of the sections is the men's section, where they get men out on bail, put them into homes, and they put them through programs that address their offending behavior. It's a Christian faith based organization, but it's not a place where the Bible is rammed down their throats. I was just hanging around Grace Foundation. I wasn't planning on turning to Christ. Christ was something far away from me. Hey, like, there's a lot of men there that look very hard, very dangerous, and you know, me coming from Australia, like, I'll be honest with you, like, I was like sort of the impression that, bro, what if these guys turn on me, you know? I ended up getting to know the boys, and you know what? They ended up just being just like the boys from Oz. But the only thing that's different is their slang. That's the only thing that's a little bit different, you know. But other than that, they still have a laugh. They're all kind guys. They just got that dangerous look. But once you get to know them, they're all good, you know. My plan was just to kick back till the boys come over. Then I'll just go over, do whatever with them, you know. Wasn't planning on staying at Grace Foundation. It was just a place that, like, honestly, I just needed to use as a place to stay. I had every intention of, once I settled down, I'm going to, like, start doing crime to make money to get myself ahead, all that sort of stuff. It's sort of like the only thought you have when you come off the plane, eh? It's like, you think it's the only option you have is to do crime to get yourself ahead, like, as a 501 deportee. I think that's what we all think, eh? And, looking back now, it's like so wrong. There's so many other roads, but you're just thinking so narrow-minded, like I was back then. I can't explain it any other way. It was that God was telling me to stop it. That's enough. You've gone too far. Like, I've just finished 8 years prison. I've been deported. What was the next disciplinary action that God was going to take on me? You know what I mean? Because that's what it was all those times that I went to jail. It was God disciplining me. That's how God disciplines his children. True, eh, brother? Yeah, and it was like he was telling me that what is the next step if you don't stop now? I don't want to be like this anymore. You know what? I'm never going to hurt another person ever again. I'm not going to, I said this all to this bloke, bro. And I was like, you know what, bro, I'm not going to make a dollar from darkness. no, I'm not going to do anything anymore. Can when you see Uncle Dave, can you tell him I want to get baptized ASAP? I want it done tomorrow, if can be, you know? And this, bro, this is no word of a lie. These events is exactly how I say it. I told someone else that day, yep, this guy's going to go ask Uncle Dave to get me baptized. I'm changing my life on the spot. This and that. And you know what they said to me, you know, now that you've said it out loud, brother, and I'll never forget it. The guy said, now you said it out loud, the devil's going to want you back. He's going to attack you. Just be aware of that. So anyways, the next day, I'm out somewhere, and the guy that's going to link me up to get baptized calls me, and he goes, brother, he goes, I got good news and I got bad news. And I was like, what? And I go, what's the good news? He goes, oh, the good news is it's sort of bad, but it's not good. I go, Uncle Dave, I didn't see him. I seen Pastor Andrew. I seen Pastor Andrew first, which is one of the pastors from Pabst the Church. He said that he'll baptize you. He was the first person I saw, so I asked him, bro, and he said that he can do it within a couple of days. And I was like, yeah, sweet, done, let's do it. And then he goes, what's the bad news, brother? And he goes, bro, one of our old housemates, it was only my room that was broke into your room and took all your belongings on the same day, brother. Yeah. And you know what? When he told me, I was like, amen. I was like, you know what? The devil, you revealed too many of your cards just then, brother, you know? You were pissed that I was and like, let me tell you, like, bro, like heaps of people from Australia sent me over like nice clothes, like a lot of good things I had in my possession, even though I wasn't out of jail for that long. I just told him, brother, you know what? Like, you can have it. It's all good, you know? That I'm on this Christ buzz now, bro, you know? You know, like, he is forgiven if I see him around, brother. All good, you know? Yeah, and then I got baptized a couple of days after that. I'd done a lot of Bible studies in jail. A lot of people don't know this, but some boys like to go in the room, do Sudoku. Some boys like to, I don't know, watch TV. All my old cellmates will remember me. I used to go in there and I used to do like Bible correspondence courses. It was and it wasn't even like looking to like convert to Christianity or anything like that. It was just something that I walked past one of the pastors at the chapel one day and he gave me a pamphlet. I'd done it and I thought it was interesting, so I kept doing them and sending them out and getting marked on them, this and that. So I had some sort of I had an understanding of the Bible. Yeah, that's exactly how I used to look at it. I was like, man, this is like really interesting stuff. That's why I used to think in jail. Yeah. So I was doing the construction thing. I was telling myself, yep, no more crime, you know, and I'm still like questioning myself, am I being real about this? You know what I mean, back then? But I just kept going with it. I'm praying to God because I knew that He has a plan for everyone. Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. I knew that stuff, and I knew there was some sort of plan for me. I was looking back and I was thinking, you know what? He brought me to Grace Foundation for this reason. He brought me back to New Zealand to get me away from Australia for some sort of reason. I actually eventually started volunteering, working under Grace Foundation in the Māori youth section. Now I'm actually employed by Grace Foundation. I am one of the managers of the youth section, and I also run a 501 ministry that has just been started. It's in its early stages, but we are helping out 501s, deportees that are currently in jail, and we're hoping to see obviously ones that aren't in jail that need help as well. It's still in the early section. So yeah, like, God did have a plan. I know this is still in early stages of God's plan. Oh yeah, it's a bit of a spin out, bro, you know, like, I'm not your traditional youth worker, I know that for sure, you know. I have my own ways of doing things and that, you know, like, but I love the job that I got. I thank God every day for it. Super grateful to Grace Foundation, to Uncle Dave, and everything that they've done for me. Where do I go from here? I'm just sort of at a stage where God's just putting these things in front of me, and I just do them the best I can till He puts the next step in front of me, you know. I do give them advice here and there, but it's more my actions. I let my actions do the talking and all that as more. I just try to be like good, honest person, you know, on this walk of Christ, And, you know, if they see it, they like it, that's it, you know?